Today, we are diving into a guide for first-time sales managers with Kady, known as the father of modern leadership. Here's what Kady has done as a sales leader. At Bench, he led the team to their first 1 million ARR month, tripling their customer base. At Patient Pop, expanded the team to over 170 members, double conversion rate and triple sales pipeline. At Service Titan, he successfully grew the team from 20 to more than 70 reps in just 1 year. This is the Easier Game, the podcast created to accelerate your sales career and build more pipeline. In this episode, we'll cover, is leadership right for you? The transition from being an individual contributor to a leader role, tactical tips and insight from Kady on leadership. Let's dive in. Kady, welcome to the show.
Pumped to be here, man. Long time coming. So excited for it and ready to dive in.
Let's start with the first question I'm always talking about. Is leadership right for you? So we know that leadership is not for everyone. What key question an IC individual contributor can ask themselves to determine if a leadership role is the right fit for them?
So there's four questions that I ask people on my team when they tell me they want to be in leadership that I ask them to think about before I'll even consider moving them into leadership. You know, the first is, are you ready to put your paycheck in someone else's hands? Are you ready to put your paycheck in someone else's hands? Because as a seller, your paycheck's in your hands, right? When you're a leader, my paycheck is no longer in my hands, right? I am not the one selling. I am not the one scaling. Like, it's in other people's hands. So the first question, are you ready for your pay to be in someone else's hands? Second question is, are you ready to potentially make less and do more? Okay? The top performing seller almost always out-earns the manager and director and oftentimes the VP. Like, if you are a top earning salesperson, you earn more than your manager by like a significant amount, right? You're probably earning almost as much as the VP just selling, right? So I have to ask this question, are you ready to potentially make less for doing more, right? Because leadership is harder. I don't care what anybody says. Leadership is harder than selling. Selling, oh my God, selling was the best. I miss it. There's probably not a month that goes by that I'm like, you know what? I should just go back and sell. Like, I loved that. Selling's fun and it's easy compared to this whole thing, right? Trying to get 150 people to do what's best and do what's right versus showing up and making cold calls. Cold calls is so much easier than that, you know? So it's like, you're going to be doing more, which leads to the next question, right? Is, are you ready to no longer have your results be tied to your work ethic? Because again, as a seller, you can work your way to results sometimes. Like, you can just brute force, put in the effort, put in the hours to get there. You can't do that as a manager. That does not work because you have to get other people to do things. And the last question is, are you ready for me to be upset with you for what your team is doing? Okay, like, are you ready to defend your team? Are you ready to be the one that stands up for them, right? And so I'm asking these questions because there are things that a lot of people don't think about before they step into leadership, right? Like, you need to be ready and understand all of those things. And if you're okay, and I'm looking for body language, I'm looking for how they respond. Like, you know, I would say 60% of people be like, yeah, like, no, like, I'm ready. I understand. And they're like 40% of people are like, ooh, geez, I didn't think about that. And I say, okay, you know, we'll probably go in this conversation. It's like, then maybe you shouldn't be a manager. It doesn't mean you can't be a leader. You can still be a leader on this team. Maybe not being a manager or a director is what's best, right? And then we go from there. But those are the questions I ask because you need to make sure you know those things. Because I know at my core, I'm a coach, I'm a teacher, I'm a builder. As much as I joke about just going back to selling, I know that within 90 days, I'd be coaching someone over here. I'd be fixing this thing over here, right? That's just what I do, you know, but it's selling. Selling's easier. I'll say it straightforward.
You mentioned 60% of your of the reps who come to you, they say they're ready. What do you do when they say they're ready? Do you challenge them on the answers, or what's your process with them?
So if they say they're ready, right? They're not ready. It means they actually want it. Readiness is a totally different conversation, right? Like, they go through a full boot camp training. I start them as a team lead to give them some ownership and work their way up, right? Because here's the, in my world, right? I don't know whether people will agree with this or not. generally speaking, I have already probably tagged you as a leader long before you've come to me saying you want to be a leader. Like, if you have to come to me and tell me you want to be a leader, something's already that I didn't already know, or I didn't already see that in you. Something's already been a little bit off, right? Every single rep that I've ever promoted to manager, I knew long before they became a manager, they had manager potential. It was because they were already doing some leading before anything was ever asked of. So when someone says they want to, then we talk about what that will look like. We talk about what that path would be, what they need to do to earn it, how they can prove they are ready. And then they go down that path.
And you said what they need to do to earn it. And you are saying about management potential. So what the triggers or maybe the things you are trying to catch?
So there's a certain level of performance, like in the role, right? You don't actually have to be the top performer, right? But I do want you consistently performing, right? As long as you are consistently like 90 to 100% of your number, right? Like that's the first part, okay? I don't need you at 110, 150. That's not, like, I'm not moving you into management because you're a great seller. I'm moving you into management because I think you'll make other people better sellers, right? So consistent performance in role, that's first. Second is living the virtues and values of the org and company, right? Do you live the virtues and values of this team? Do you represent the behaviors that we are looking for? And then from there, how to earn it, right? You have to complete the boot camp, right? So there's a full like leadership management boot camp that you have to go through. And then you also have to pass, I guess, call them like back channel peer reviews, right? If I'm promoting you on the current sales team, I should be getting thumbs up from other people on that sales team if I mention it, right? If I go and I say, hey, you know, Elric, Julia has been talking about getting into management. Well, how do you think the team would respond to that? And you're like, oh man, they'd love that. Great. They're like, ooh, I don't think so. I need to understand why, right? Because there are, again, sellers. You're good at selling. The version of you that I get might be very different than the version that the rest of the team is getting. And I have sussed out some things through that where, you know, like, yeah, like I thought this person was great and they're doing all the things. Then you go and talk to the team and it's like, oh God, like, no, like they're awful to be around. Like no one on the team enjoys being around them or working with them. And I have to really dig in and figure out what's going on there, right? So that's how then you call it earn that promotion. And we do like that.
I don't remember which podcast you are saying that, but generally you have like a training for the reps, but generally you don't have like a training program for managers. So for each company that you work for, did you build the bootcamp from scratch for them?
Like, I mean, no, let me rephrase that. I didn't build it from scratch because I have it all recorded now, right? Like I have my module on how to run a one-on-one, how to do issue diagnosis, how to do hiring, how to do firing. So I have all the content already for them to go through. So I'm not rebuilding it from scratch because I've built it. I update it, right? If there's some new things that I put in there, but no, like it's built now. I can take that company to company, right? And that's what helps me, you know, really quickly onboard people, get managers up to speed, everything.
Knowing that, and with your current knowledge, if you were, let's say, starting a sales manager again from, I would say, with all the experience you have, what would your first 90 days look like broken down into actionable steps?
Funny enough, someone in my leadership accelerator group asked this question the other day. So the 90-day plan is always the same for me. First 30 days is people. You get to know your people, right? What are their goals? What are their motivations? What are their skills? What are they good at? Where are they trying to go and grow? How much do they want to make? Where do they need to develop? Like the first month, those first 30 days are all about getting to know your people, right? Really diving in and understanding them, how they like to be led, how they like to be communicated with, everything like that. Day 30 to 60, that is all now prospect and product, right? Now that I know my people, now it's like, okay, I need to understand the prospect and I need to understand the product. But again, I'm going to lean on my people to learn those things. That helps actually build the relationship. I want them to teach me these things. This is when I'm doing customer interviews. This is when I'm, you know, going through the product as a user. I'm going through the onboarding flow. I'm reading all of our reviews. Like I want to understand that product inside and out and understand the prospect inside and out. Those are days 30 to 60. 60 to 90, now it's about process. What is our current sales process? And then what are the process updates that I need to make in order to improve performance, right? Because now I can do that. I know my people, I know the product, I know the prospect. Now and only now, right, can I actually focus on making things better for performance and process. So that's my 30, 60, 90. People, product, prospect, process, and performance. That's it.
So let's focus on people. You are talking about long-term goals, their skills, the way they want to be led, the communication style. What do you do during these first months? Do you have like different sessions with them, like an hour every week, or what's your process with them?
Again, if I'm talking as a manager, right? Because like I do this as a CRO, right? When I join a company, I have a one-on-one with every single rep, my first month, every single one, a lot of one-on-ones. If I'm a manager, I probably at most have 10 reps, right? So yeah, you should have multiple one-on-ones with them, right, over that month. But the goal of the one-on-one is about them, right? Getting their ideas, getting what they're thinking about, all of that. Like that's the goal of those one-on-ones. Too often managers jump into those early one-on-ones and they're already trying to make their people better, right? They're already trying to like give them feedback on things like, or I'm going to show them that I'm good at this. Let them show you that they're good at this, right? Like it's the other way around. So yeah, you're having one-on-ones, shadowing, go grab lunch, grab coffee, do a dinner. Like really, it's about getting to know your people.
Now let's focus on you and specifically, but what is something you did differently than other sales leaders 5 or 10 years ago that led to pushback but help you in the long run?
Oh, checklist for sure.
Checklist.
There's this aversion to structure in sales that finally everyone is like catching up to, right? Like sales for the longest time, it's, you know, it's all art, no science. It's like, oh no, you can't build a script for enterprise sellers. You can't use a checklist for, it's like, no, you can and should, right? So it's definitely the documentation and checklist that I have always done very differently. In terms of my orgs, is once we know, you know, what we call the wiggle, WGLL, what good looks like. Once I know what good looks like, you know, we go through the 4 Ds: define it, document it, demonstrate it, deliberately practice it. Right? That is very different than most orgs and most sales leaders. And you know, people are starting to come around to it now, finally. But that was different. Where people have pushback. Oh, it's too structured. It's not. You know, it needs to be free-flowing. It's like, really, you want a rep getting on a call and just having a free-flowing conversation for a $1 million deal? That sounds like a great recipe. It's free. Like, no, there's certain things you need to accomplish on that call. Let's accomplish those things with a free-flowing conversation. So that, I'd say that's probably the biggest.
You said define it, document it. What was the third one?
Define. So it's the 4 Ds of scale. Define. So like, yeah, I should just define like what does good look like? What is good? Like we got to define this. Document it. It has to be written down somewhere. Like it needs to be down on paper. Cannot live in your head. That's where a lot of best practices live for a lot of leaders is they're just in their head, right? So you have to define and document. Third D is demonstrate. You have to show people what good looks like, right? So that's through trainings. That's through call recordings. That's through coaching. That's through best practice libraries, videos. You need to show them what good looks like. Even something as simple, like leaders do this all the time. Sellers, you got to keep your pipeline up to date. Have you ever actually shown them, demonstrated what that looks like and how you want it done, right? Again, these are just little things that live in people's heads that they don't know. So you have to demonstrate it, show it. And that fourth D is deliberate practice, because that's the other place that I will say I've gotten pushback on. I don't get as much pushback on it now, but people still don't do it enough, is practice. Practice is built into my orgs. And when people say things like, oh, well, our reps are experienced, I go, cool, they're all hitting their number? Well, no. Okay. So... Again, I'm a big believer in IIW, which is it working? If I come to you and your team is hitting 100% of their number and everybody's happy, then is it working? Yes. Cool.
you are not my concern. Keep it up. I'm happy for you. That is not even an argument I'm going to get into with you. Like, cool, it's working for you. But that's not the reality for 90% of orgs out there. So practice, that deliberate practice of what good looks like is missing in almost every company I talk to. Reps are practicing on prospects. They're not practicing on purpose, and that's a problem.
Let's go back to document. So when you say documenting, for example, are you talking about having a playbook where you have everything into a playbook? Or?
So kind of, yes. So a playbook can kind of be documented, but most playbooks don't have what good looks like in them. And most playbooks are not very usable, right? So I've actually kind of grown in my process of saying that. Like, I focus heavily on short, punchy checklists. Right? Playbooks tend to be long and heavy and bloated, and there's a lot of info in them. I focus on short, punchy checklists. Here's what good disco looks like. One page. Here's what a good demo looks like. This is the things that we cover and how we do it on one page, right? So my playbooks have gone from, you know, being hundreds of pages, 50, right? And like really condensing them. So you can do it in a playbook, but you have to do it in a way that is usable. Most playbooks are not usable for orgs, and that's why no one uses them.
And so you are saying that you had playbooks with more than 100 pages and moved to 50 pages. So what did you remove from the playbook?
Oh, just a lot of the fluff, a lot of like things that didn't really matter. I moved more things into video versus written. Right? Let's see. Hold on. Here we go. This is like one of my old like onboarding playbooks, right? Like, look at this bad boy. Like, look at this bad boy. Right. And this thing, by the way, helped generate tens and tens. Oh, no, this is hundreds of millions of dollars generated by this playbook, right? But there's too much in this. Now, this is the onboarding playbook. So this one actually worked really, really well. Right? This one here, this was like my AE bootcamp playbook, right? And you can see in here, demo overview, disco. This is when it started to get short. Can you see the difference in these? So here's this one. Is this one, right? Side by side, you can see, right? This is almost half as much, right? So you just slowly are condensing it down into what it needs to be.
Because here it was on paper, but you said you included videos or so on it?
Yeah. So that was the paper version. And then, of course, all that is digital as well, right? It's all digital also. And then, yeah, like you build it out and do it the right way.
What is something most sales managers think is important that sales managers can skip entirely?
I don't know if I can think of something that most managers think is important that they can skip entirely. The one that is closest to that list, I'll say is close to entirely, is being on sales calls.
Okay.
It's not, I don't want to say entirely, because there's always a place for it. There's always a time for it. But I know managers tend to spend way too much time on that. And they all think that's the most important thing to do. That's a place. This one will get the people fired up because people just don't like to think this way. But that's the case. That is the place I see more often than not. Managers spending 10, 15 hours a week on calls. If you're going to be spending 10, 15 hours a week on calls, you might as well be a salesperson. I didn't hire you to sell. I hired you to make other sellers better, right? And if you have to be on all those calls, then you're quite literally not making your people better because you had to be on those calls. Right? You got to ask you. I just had this conversation with someone the other day. We're out golfing and they're a sales manager. So of course we get into it. You know, we're talking about sales management stuff. And he's like, yeah, like I think that's the most important thing I should be doing. And I was like, well, then you should just be a seller. Like if that's the biggest value is you being on these calls, then you should just be selling. Like I need you to really ask, like, what do you doing on these calls? Like specifically, what are you doing? What are you doing that your rep is not? That's what you got to teach them. That's what you got to coach them. So that's the one. That is the one. Again, before anyone gets crazy, I didn't say never. Everyone hear me. I was very clear that there's times for it, but that is a place that I think managers put way too much time that they shouldn't be, because that's hours and hours and hours on calls where either you didn't do anything, so it was a waste, you didn't make your rep better, right? Or you were the one that closed the deal. Great job. Then you're a seller. You're not a manager. That's not what I hired you for.
So instead, they should spend this time to coach their team.
Yeah. If they spent that same 15 hours a week coaching their reps, guess what you'd have to be on less calls because you're coaching them on what needs to be done, right? Because also, too, just probabilities. This was a big one, right? Think about a good close rate. Good close rates, 30%, let's say. Okay. Well, how many calls do you have to be on to get that 30% close rate? And then two, we're still talking about doing something that only has a 30% likelihood of proving results, right? So I can already look at those 20 hours spent on a week on calls and only 6 hours of those were actually probably producing any type of impact. Whereas if those 20 hours are spent coaching your reps, the likelihood of impact is significantly higher than 30%, significantly higher because their skills are better. So that's the one. That's the one. Everyone probably has turned off your podcast right now. Like, I don't want to listen to this guy anymore.
I had this question on the list for later, but I wasn't sure what time that you're going to focus on that specifically.
Yep.
But yeah, if we focus on that specifically, because if they're on the call with them, basically they are not teaching them anything, because if they are doing the call for them, they are not doing them a favor, right?
It's like when this is, again, managers, you got to ask, what are you doing on the call? Because if you're, for the most part too, managers are quiet for 80% of it. So again, what are you doing on that call? What's that 20% that you're adding? Okay, you need to coach your people then on how to do that 20%. Like that to me, right? Otherwise, you're always going to have to be on those calls. And again, managers and VPs, because it's your fault that they're doing this, they think that is coaching, that I'm making my rep better by showing them how I do this. That's not how skill development works. I've been watching golf my whole life. Still not super good at it, just because I watch the best do it. That's not how you get good at
it. It's practicing.
Okay.
What's something important to your daily routine as a leader you wish you started sooner, and why?
It's actually funny. This was in my routine and then I lost it. I've had to bring it back, which was like just movement, walking. When I was in the office, I was always moving. Always moving. Right, I was averaging 12,000 steps a day, easy, right? Different offices, up and downstairs, walking to coffee, like movement, right, is big. Then once everything went remote, I was like, I'll move. I just sit here all day. I had to get a little baby treadmill under my desk just so I can like stand and like get moving throughout the day. So that's definitely part of the daily routine now that I had to get back to. Like I used to have it, and then I realized like I lost it when we went fully remote. The other is just taking breaths, just slowing down for a moment, you know, just like, oh, okay, there we go. First good deep breath in a while, right? It's like taking those moments to reset throughout the day, right? I can tend to just go and go and go and go versus like just taking that moment to reset and kind of recreate. That's another one.
To go back on the steps, you said you're in your office, it's easier, but why is it important for you during the day comparing to the remote environment?
Yeah. So when I say like when I was in office, the movement was because I would meet with my people, you're walking around, right? You got to find a room, different floors, right? So just moving. Once remote, you're sitting, I'm sitting,
yeah.
Right? When I have got 13 back-to-back meetings in a day, I'm not good. Even like then I would be at least moving offices. Now I'm just sitting. Right? So movement's just good because it's better for your brain. It's better for your body. You get better ideas when you are moving, right? It's like, that's why that's important is, you know, it just makes you a better leader.
And what's your plan to change that?
So I got a little treadmill underneath my desk, right? So that helps, right? I do, like, if I have a break, I try to get outside and ground, or I just put my feet on the grass. I just be outside for a second, get some sunlight to come in, right? So it's just being intentional about it.
And you were talking about breathing. So when you say breathing, for example, are you taking count of your breaths? Do you have like specific time during the day just to have like time to between back-to-back meetings?
So I don't have like a specific time, but I do try to make time, right? So actually, funny enough, my waiting room, right? So if you join my Zoom, what the waiting room message says is take a breath, reset, looking forward to chatting soon. That's actually what it says in the waiting room. And people have commented on that. They're like, that was great. Like, I actually took a breath. I was like, right? Like, we hold our breath way more than we realize, right? So it's like in between meetings, like even back-to-backs. Like, I'm somewhat, you know, notorious for being like 2 minutes late to a meeting, right? And it's because when they're back to back to back, right? This one ends right at 2:30. The next one starts at 2:30. That's actually not how our brains are wired to do things. It's not how it ever was in the office. There was always some sort of like little reset. So it's like, I take that moment to like catch a breath. Like, okay, oh, all right, what's my intention going into this next one? All right, now I can go in, right, to go through it. And to me, those 2 minutes are worth it.
Okay, what I tried specifically is, you know, on Google Calendar, you can set, instead of an hour, you can set 50 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
To stop that, because like you said, sometimes I have like 6 hours of back-to-back meetings, and that's something to prevent that. Obviously, it's not perfect, but that helps with that.
The 50, so 50s and 45s like are pretty much all I ever do. I very rarely do 60s. It's the 30s. Those are the ones that kill me, because 30 minutes down to 25 is a lot harder, right, to like to pull off. And so it's the 30s that go back to back, right? That's where I get into trouble. The 45s, that almost always gives me a gap, always. But the 30s, those are the ones kill me, man.
What can a new sales manager expect to struggle with along the way?
Should have been the first and only question for this whole hour, man. Where are they going to struggle? I'll answer this as simply as possible. The biggest place that they will struggle is people. People are hard, right? People are not meant to be managed. Right? We are unmanageable. We can barely manage ourselves, let alone manage other people. So your number one challenge as a manager, as a leader, will always be people, always, which is why I try to spend so much time trying to understand people. What makes us tick? What are the commonalities across people? What are unique about people? What does fear cause people to do? What does anxiety cause people to do? How do people learn? How do people communicate? Like, I'm obsessed with trying to understand people better. Because that is all leadership is, that's all parenting is, that's all marriages are, that's all selling is. It's people, right? And that is where managers, you know, will struggle, is how do you get people to do what's best? How do you get people to change their behavior? How do you get people to change their minds? How do you get people to change their habits? Like, that is the biggest challenge by far. In leadership, by far. And I still struggle with it every day, right? And I've gotten good at it, pretty dang good at this thing, but I got to work at it. And I'm still trying new things, and I'm still trying to adapt and figure out better ways to do things for people. I ran into one of my old managers a couple months ago, and like we were talking about stuff, and I showed him something. He's like, whoa, like, this is new. I've never seen this. I was like, bro, you worked for me 4 years ago. Like, what do you think I've been doing? Like, I'm still trying things. I'm still testing things. I'm still learning. I'm still figuring out how to do this. But it's people. How can you get people to do what is needed to be done is going to be the biggest struggle that you deal with, because people are emotional. We're illogical. At our core, we actually are pretty lazy. Like, we always want to find the easy way to do things, right? All great inventions were all built around ease. Everything that's ever been invented was to make something easier, right? Very few things have ever been invented to make something harder, right? We are ease creatures at our core, and that is the hardest part of leadership.
We can think about, for example, in SDR, that's struggling with cold calling, for example. It was not consistent. So what would be your process to change that?
So first is can I understand why they're struggling, right? Can I understand why they are struggling? Is it a confidence issue? Is it a competence issue? Is it the same? Is there a fear somewhere? Do they not know how? So first I need to understand that. Then with cold calling specifically, cold calling almost always roots from a place of fear and a place of uncertainty, right? It's a lack of confidence to make those calls. Well, what builds confidence? Coaching and repetition. So I'm going to coach them and give them a lot of repetition in a safe space first. Let's do this in practice. Let's get comfortable there. Then from there, it's actually setting them up for success and building up the behavior, right? So when you're trying to create a habit, you actually want to start small. This is how a lot of sellers and leaders don't do this, right? You get at an SDR boot camp and it's, all right, 100 calls a day. You're like, what? Like, so if I'm working with this individual, okay, 10 calls. Tomorrow's your first day on the phone, 10 calls. 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. And I don't even care if anybody answers, but you are going to make these 10 calls. Then you're going to make 12. Then you're going to make 15. All the while, you're still practicing, you're still learning, you're still getting coaching around this, right? And like, truthfully, if it's someone that I really do want to invest in, I'm even changing what they're calling for. Right? I literally want you making these calls just to learn something about the business, right? So that the scripting actually sounds like this. It's like, hey, Elric, I was actually thinking of sending an email over to Jenny, but I didn't want to waste their time if it didn't make sense. Like, could I ask you two quick questions, see if it's even worth sending her something? Okay, right? Like, I'm getting them into making the calls. They're going to learn something. And they say, all right, thank you, bye. They get off the phone. So you build them up. And the last key point here is positive recognition. Massive amounts of positive recognition for doing the thing that I'm asking you to do. You did it. Those 10 calls. Way to go, Elric. That's what I'm talking about. I didn't book any meetings. I didn't ask you to book any meetings. I asked you to make those calls today and you did it. Great job. Let's do it again tomorrow. We're going for 12. I could do more than 12. I bet you can. I'm just asking for 12. That would be the process for that individual.
What you just mentioned here, it made me think about the book Atomic Habits, actually. And there is a whole chapter about building habits and specifically about running. And they are talking about running a marathon, for example. And you're not starting by running a marathon on day one. And so you start, they give the example of building the habit first on, hey, every day you go outside and you walk for 10 minutes. And that's it. And then you start increasing that. So I think building, if we talk about building a habit also, it's for someone who is struggling or maybe was afraid of cold calling, maybe a better approach to build this.
Yeah, it's slowing down to speed up. I know there's leaders listening right now, but I don't have time for that. I mean, okay, you don't have time for it, but it would work better. So you have to make a choice, right? You can either force people in fast and burn them out or watch them fail. Or you can take a little bit more time and build them up to what they need to do. Just a choice, right? Like everything in leadership is about choice. You can run it however you want to. I've run it on both extremes. I'm going to get you failing and failing hard fast. It doesn't work well, y'all. I'd rather build you up, get you feeling good, give you some wins and watch them grow faster. It's so much better.
And at the end, doing this way, actually, it built the skill for the person that you're working with. Because if we go back to what you're saying, it's hard to manage people. And because of that, if you say it's 100 calls and you don't take the time to build the confidence or build the skills to get to 100 calls, it's not going to work in the long term. So,
yeah. And just as we wrap this thought up, what do you think that does to my relationship with that rep as their manager? I think maybe it's a stronger relationship. Maybe they have a little bit more trust in me. Maybe they see me as more of a guide and a mentor than a manager when I'm really focused on trying to develop them. Right? It builds those bonds, man. Like, I got a text from a former rep just the other day saying like they have like a new job that they landed, and you know, send a little note like, how's it going? Like word for word, like, oh my gosh, like I'm loving it. I'm catching my stride, right? There wasn't nearly as much process as I'm used to. Like, you really helped us learn how to do the right process and training, but it's working, and it's working here. It was always the goal, teach you the skills and the process that now you can go anywhere and do this stuff, right? Like, she hasn't worked for me for 5 years, still there, you know? So like, that's the relationships you want to build with your people.
What is one belief or practice you had to unlearn to succeed in your leadership role?
Oh, man. I don't know if I can just do one. I'll say the biggest one, and this is a mantra that I say with my managers quite often. And I say it, and they have to say it back. And it goes like this. I am not you. You are not me. We are not them. They are not us. It's one of the biggest things that we have to remember in leadership. I am not you. You are not me. We are not them. They are not us. So many leaders get into leadership and they try to turn everybody into them. You can't, right? And then on top of that, they expect people to work the way they worked. You can't expect that, right? I am not you. You are not me. We are not them. They are not us. There's a reason we're in the position that we're in as leaders. We're different. We think differently. We work differently. We do things differently. That's the biggest belief that I had to shift. Early on in my leadership career, I was really pushing, and I'll say it, trying to like force people to be like me. Sell like me, work like me, run your day like me, do your goals like me, right? Like you need to be like me. And that was wrong. It was not the right way. I've actually apologized to some of the earlier reps in my career of like, it worked. We accomplished some great things, but I pushed people too hard. I expected too much of people, and that was not fair to them, right? And so far and away, that's one of my biggest learning lessons. I'm not you, you are not me, we are not them, they are not us. There's a difference there, and I need to try to find that gap, right, and bridge it, but I can't, people are not going to work the way that I work. They're not.
Recently, I listened to this specifically. We just say here that someone's asking, hey, I want my team to do the things the way I want. So what did you do to change that? So did you take time to have this changing that in your process, or what would you do?
A lot of things. One is like, okay, well, what is it I want them to do? Can I explain why it works, first of all, other than I did it this way? That's helpful. Two, can I give them different versions to accomplish the same thing? But then three, like, can I actually help them get good at it? Right? Can I help them get good at it versus like just telling them to be good at it, right? Slowing down a little bit. But then also one of the things we talked about earlier is understanding their goals. I know what I'm trying to accomplish. Okay. I can't expect people to work the way that I work if they're not trying to accomplish what I'm trying to accomplish. So is setting more reasonable standards on certain things of like, this is what I expect. There's room to go above and beyond it. This is what I expect, but I'm going to coach you and train you and help you get good at these things, right? So that was some of the shifts.
Okay, last question for this episode today. Given the lack of resources for new sales manager, what are the top three resources you recommend they seek out first? Can be book, podcast?
So I'll say selfishly, that's why I built the Sales Leadership Accelerator. Right, so I built like this very same training I take my own managers through. I have packaged up. It's a community. It's a course, all the templates. So Sales Leadership Accelerator, I'd highly recommend it. Next, there's four mandatory books that I have my managers read, even when they work for me. I'm still having them read other people, right? So Cracking the Sales Manager Code by Cracking the Sales Management Code by Jason Jordan. Sales Manager Survival Guide by Dave Brock. Radical Candor by Kim Scott is mandatory reading. And The Connector Manager. Those four books. Connector Manager. Those four books are mandatory reading, right? So read those books. And then lastly, it's find mentors, right? Reach out to people that appear to be doing the thing that you want to do and reach out. Ask to learn, ask for help, ask what resources they would point you towards. Those would be my three big tips.
If we go back just on the books, so I had three of them on my list already, but I think it was a conference that you gave at Saster. You are giving leaders Eat Less by Simon Sinek. So you change it to Connector Manager. What did you find in Connector Manager to replace this one, for example?
A little bit more tactical. Right. So I love Simon Sinek's stuff. Love it. It's hard to apply. It's not always super tactical, right? I thought the Connector Manager did a little bit better job of teaching my manager some of the tactics they needed to do, right? Leaders Eat Last is more of a mindset than it is like a tactical, here's what's going to make me better in my job tomorrow type thing. So that's why.
For those who didn't read Radical Candor and the two other books, so why Radical Candor? Why is it on the list?
Because part of management is having the tough conversations, right? But her whole concept is challenge with care. And you challenge, I have led now probably close to 1,000 reps. I have led easily 60 plus managers. I've trained well over 1,000 managers now. You will not find someone that says KD is easy to work for. You will not find them. There's not one person like, oh yeah, KD, easy. Pushover. I need light. And you won't find one that will say I'm easy to work for. But the vast majority will tell you I'm worth working for. Not all of them, because you can't win everybody over, right? I'll say 60% of my teams genuinely like me and enjoy working for me. I'll say another 20% of those teams, like, they may not like me, but they respect and they understand. Like, we may not be boys, but you get what I'm doing and you get why I'm doing it. And then you have 20% that are just not. They're just not going to like you. You don't like everybody. That's fine, right? But what the 80% for sure would be able to tell you is that I care. They know I challenge you because I care about you. I push you because I care. I sit you down and talk to you because I care about you. In fact, I'm very upfront about it. Like, if I'm not pushing you, you should actually be more worried than if I am. Because it means I've lost care. I don't care about your success anymore. That's a problem. So that's why radical candor is in this. I want my managers, one, not shying away from, right? Because a lot of managers, they want to be liked. A lot of managers might be now managing people they used to be reps with. It's hard. How do you have the tough conversations, but in a way that shows that you care? So that's why that one's in there.
Well, KD, we are at the end of the episode today. So thank you so much for being on the show. Do you have anything else you want to share with the audience?
No, my man, I appreciate you having me. I think we got into some good stuff today. So, feel good.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening. I see you on the next episode. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app. Then you go to the SDR Game page. And then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoy the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.